Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about children and cancer with Camille Butler, who is the founder and director of the Journey to Happiness movement. Of course, Camille and her husband, they lost their 13-year-old daughter to cancer just last year. And of course, we have Dr. Sohail Rana, director of community outreach and education. He's also professor of pediatrics and child health at Howard University Hospital. Lines are still open if you have a question or comment at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Rana, as we said earlier in this conversation, and I remember growing up, when we talked about cancer in children, it was almost always leukemia. Why is leukemia the most common of the cancers for children?
Well, some of the reasons could be that it's the fastest dividing organ because it's constantly dividing. We have to reproduce our cells. And some of it may have to do with underlying genetic abnormalities. Some of them we have discovered and some we haven't discovered. So it's and some of it may have to do with exposure to different carcinogen, more likely to be viral or infectious agents rather than chemicals, which take long time to express themselves. But very close second to leukemia is brain cancer, and then lymphomas, which are of lymphoid tissue. They resemble very much like leukemia. They resemble leukemia very much. And then there is the kidney cancer, but more Wilms tumor and neuroblastoma, which is tumor of the nervous system as well, but outside the brain. So that pretty much makes up the rare bone cancer, rare pancreatic cancer, rare eye cancer. But most of the kidney cancers in children are Wilms tumor, and they are curable, unlike renal medullary carcinoma, which unfortunately by the time it presents, most of the time, almost 70-80% of the time, it is stage 4 already. Mm-hmm. It has metastasized to lung and other places, and that is very unfortunate. And its initial growth is silent. It doesn't announce itself. So that makes it very, very hard to treat it. And just because it's so rare, there haven't been clinical trials to do to find what drugs work better, but radiation and chemotherapy tried, but it's tried in stage 4 and then it doesn't work.
What are the chances if it had been diagnosed much earlier, stage 1, stage 2,
yeah,
could a transplant or something else have perhaps either prolonged Journey's life or even saved it? Is that possible?
I think it's certainly possible. Stage 1 would mean that it's still restricted to kidney.
But it's still hard to find.
Right.
That's
but, you know, like some lucky person may have extensive bleeding from that kidney, for example, because of cancer, and that would lead to early diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's just so many factors that are involved in the outcome. So sometime a cancer announces itself very quickly by virtue of where it is. For example, some brain cancer, they are less than a pea size, but being in the midbrain, they announce themselves early, but unfortunately they can kill very early. But just to say a word, that most of the childhood cancer is treatable, 85% survival for 5 years. So 85% of children diagnosed with cancer today would survive at least 5 years. And probably 70% would be cured of their cancer. Unfortunately, many of these children would have complications because of the treatment as well as the cancer itself that they receive.
You want to say something earlier?
I was just going to say that's why the ultrasound is so important. Like Dr. Rana mentioned, for RMC, it does not present itself until stage 4. But there has been a, and I'm not going to say the only case, but I know of a gentleman who and I heard this from a support group. He was diagnosed in the military only because he was having an exit exam. I guess that's what it's called when you retire.
Right.
And, you know, the military, they examine everything. And they found it, I believe it was a stage one, removed his kidney, and he's fine. And I believe we're talking like 10 years later. I mean, he's living a normal life. I mean, he didn't know he had it. There were no other signs. It's just because of the exam. So I do believe that early, you know, detection would, you know.
What do you want people to know about, if I may, Journey's journey?
Yeah.
Because you, even your description, you know, of her earlier in this conversation, I feel that I do have a sense of you know, who, you know, the kind of girl that she was, and as the father of a daughter, you know daughters.
Yes,
you,
yes.
You know.
She was a baddie's girl, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that, you know. Yeah, there's absolutely that. What do you want people to know about her?
You know, about her,
mm-hmm.
I would say it's the, I'm trying to think of the right word, you know, she, for the spirit and energy she had, no one would believe illness. And I mean, maybe that's what parents think, but I'm saying this to say it can be you, you know, it can be anyone. And the whole purpose of the nonprofit is really to push advocacy 100%. Don't take every word. Doctors aren't, you know, they're not God. They study, but you can't, you have to look beyond. And I think just having the sickle cell trait, we have to know there aren't enough studies out right now, and we have to continue to advocate. If they say, no, we're not going to give you the ultrasound, because you have to push. You have to push and say, no, I want them to have it, because if they're having any side pain or blood in the urine, anything like that, it could be too late. I don't want to find out when they're stage four. So if I see any sign, anything that alarms me, they have the trait, and I'm demanding an ultrasound. If that doctor won't give it, find another one. And I know people who have done that, and it's worked. You know, just find the doctor that'll give it to you. But it's, I know it's an assurance thing, too, because ultrasounds are expensive. You know, but what is your child's life worth? No one's going to fight for your child like you will. Mm-hmm. They just won't.
Has it changed the way you've looked at the health of your other children, even the oldest?
Oh, yes. Shortly after her diagnosis, she switched to a vegan diet. Because I do believe that nutrition in all cancers, I believe that nutrition can have something to do with it as well. That's just our personal belief from what we've looked into. And so one of my sons is still a vegan. He started with her. And my other daughter, she still eats seafood and some things, but we definitely have changed the way we eat, you know, our dinners. We're looking at everything, just the water intake, just everything that we can to, it's not going to be perfect, but we are making a conscious effort, and that takes some time and some recipe books, you know, and reading and trying new things. But it's been fun. We've made it a family effort, and there's so much out there now, unlike 20 years ago, you know, with all the great grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to do it, but it's so important. I don't think you like the fast food.
Yeah,
we haven't even pulled up.
Can you cook?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I don't know. You know, I kind of looked at him.
He better answer correctly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yes, I can with the neck.
Yes.
Right.
You need that. That makes
yeah,
it official.
Yes, you did. Yeah. what about that, Dr. Rana? When people who are, you know, obviously whether it be for severe health situations or just, you know, in general, your thoughts about that. The wholesale switching, you know, to, you know, vegan diet or some other kind of health regimen regarding diet.
Yeah. In most, I would say almost all childhood cancer is not preventable in the sense. So I think that I can make a statement categorical as of today. Maybe 20 years from now, we'll think differently. But as of today, childhood cancer is not preventable. Because of the factors involved. But, you know, I look at these two wonderful people, and most of the audience can't see them. Thanks to those diets, they look beautiful. So do it for other reason. Do it for the sharpness of the brain. Do it for your, you know, for having a wonderful day. But don't kill yourself, you know, for going to vegan diet either. Because, you know, me and my wife, hey, we are meat eaters. I mean, we feel sick if we haven't had meat. So, you know, for each his own. And I've said this before, and it may not make very good sense. But, you know, one of my patients with sickle cell disease said that, and she said it so beautifully, and you heard it, that life is a sexually transmitted condition, which is fatal. Mm. Yeah. We are all going to die. I think we don't know about tomorrow. Dalai Lama said, there are 2 days in a year about which we know nothing. One is yesterday, because we can't do anything about it. And second is tomorrow, because we would never know what challenges we face. So we have today, you know, let's find everything to love each other today. Let's be good to each other. Let's do the best. You know, let's make it the most wonderful, loving, caring day, and make it best for your community.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great way to end this conversation. And I certainly hope, Camille, that you, your husband, and the family continue to keep Journey's memory alive through this organization. And the healing, I hope that continues to be on the upswing for all of you. So thank you so much for sharing this really important conversation.
I appreciate you. Yes,
thank you. And don't forget, this information will be posted on WHUR.com, JourneyToHappinessMovement.org. There is a 5K awareness walk and run. It's on September 30th. That information will be on our website later on this evening. Camille Butler, Dr. Sohail Rana, thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, September 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton.